eLearning Brunch, your podcast for digitalization and learning. So, hi, and welcome to our new episode of eLearning Brunch. Today's episode is called Learning Culture versus Learning Analytics. And for that, I have a very, 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 very interesting guest with me, and that's David James. David James is from Loop and also is a fellow, how should we say, David, best contender or
competitor?
Competitor, yes, exactly. In the great market of the LMS industry. So with that, welcome, David.
Thank you very much, Kenneth. We can also say we're friends in podcasting, though, can't we? Competitors in the platforms, but friends in podcasting.
Exactly. Because as you'll find out in a couple seconds, David also runs his own podcasts. Plural. So it's a whole shebang of different topics. But so let's go through the first thing. How did we meet? I think that's a really fun question. How did we meet? I'll leave that question over to you.
I think it was on LinkedIn, wasn't it? I think that might have had an exchange there, unless my memory serves.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. Actually, the whole thing started off kind of funny because we're looking for a guest speaker. Mm-hmm. And one of my colleagues that does the German version of the podcast came up with the idea just to put an email out or put a question out on LinkedIn. And one of our colleagues, Greg, basically found you, and then we got linked up. So, that's a play on words almost, linked up on LinkedIn. Okay. So give us a little bit of background to yourself on how you got started in the e-learning sector, or how your journey started and how you ended up in the e-learning sector.
Yeah, sure. So I've been in learning and development since the late 1990s. I spent 15 years in company roles. I spent the first half of that in finance and banking in three different organizations, spent the second half of that at Disney. But I mentioned that first of all because I was on the client side when I first experienced e-learning in the late 1990s, and I spent an enormous amount of my time in company roles trying to push e-learning whilst it was being largely ignored, if not actively resisted. We used to get CD-ROMs through the post when I worked at we were in a division of EDS, the outsourcing company, and they had their big learning hub. So we'd get our NetDimensions CD-ROMs through. And whilst we were being promised, and we'd read all the time that e-learning was going to replace the classroom, my thoughts were, what with this rubbish? I mean, it was awful. I mean, it really was. But you know what? Do you know what, Kenneth? It's not a million miles off what we experienced today. It was scenario-based. Well, first of all, it's educational. It's around particular topics. You've got these scenarios where you've got these people acting stuff out, and you select the option that you want. It's all very sanitized. It's limited options as you were doing this, and I'm trying to push this to learners, and they weren't interested. Not interested one iota. So when I joined Disney in 2006, I remember my exact words were, I'm going to see Pixar quality e-learning. Now, like, I look back now and I think, what exactly do I mean there? But I think the problem that I always faced in-house was that nobody wanted to use the e-learning. So there I'm thinking, well, there must be some kind of allure. I mean, this is Disney with the production value. I'm going to see something quite incredible. So I logged onto the LMS, and my word, that was not an easy task, because it was as clunky and as difficult to get into as many of them still are today. And when I got in there, it's the same rubbish. Okay, it's not NetDimensions, but Christ. I mean, it was dreadful. I mean, it was dry, sanitized, it was facile, and it was no use at all. And then I was told that, we don't have a lot of take up here. And David, your role is to try to increase engagement in this across the UK. I was like, oh my goodness.
With this being your product, this limited not very nice product, and you have to push that to your users.
Exactly. And the only way you'd get any kind of meaningful engagement was by making it mandatory. And we all know, I mean, people say that gamification is the savior of e-learning. And I say people have been gaming e-learning well before there was gamification. When somebody approached me at Disney and said, "Hey, David, I did your training, but I had it going on underneath my work. All I did was click next afterwards." I'm going, "Oh, brilliant. Thanks for letting me know that." But like,
so okay, that completely missed the point then.
Exactly. So people were telling me they were gaming it. So I went through all of that time, and you know, we can laugh about this now, but I got it pretty senior at Disney, and I was director of learning talent and organizational development for Europe, Middle East, and Africa. And we were going, and the period I was there, 2006 to 2014, was a period of enormous disruption. Technology and consumer preferences meant that the old model of Disney and the old relationship with consumers, which very much Disney was the master and the consumers were lucky to get what they were given, was completely shifted during that period, where consumers chose more, well, first of all, less linear approaches and more, wanted more engagement with the brands that they were involved with or they were aligned to. And Disney had to completely shift that, and there wasn't a single part of the organization that wasn't disrupted. Now, when we were supporting people to do fundamentally different things to achieve fundamentally different results, we did it all manually, because we were massively let down by clunky systems full of generic e-learning. So my in-house career, as far as e-learning was concerned, was one of huge frustration. But at the same time, I was expected to sell this rubbish to a load of people who didn't see the value and were actively resisting. And that was a huge chunk of my time that I should have been spent on helping to equip people to do what they were expected to do and help the organization to achieve what it was trying to do during a period of great disruption.
Okay, that's amazing. Okay, so there's a couple things, there's a lot to touch on, but one of the topics that you mentioned was also gamification. Now, I had a podcast on gamification earlier, and I thought that was really, really an interesting subject. But how long, in your experience, has gamification then been around? Because I haven't been in the industry as long as you have, and I started my work here at the IMC with in the content area, and gamification is always the holy grail. So from your perspective, since you've been in the business longer, how long has gamification been the holy grail?
I'd say that I became first aware of gamification, not necessarily in the context of learning, because again, we've picked up on this later down the line, but it must have been around about 2011. And we had a Disney Expo in which we had people coming in and talking about what some of the emerging trends around digital were, and gamification was a huge part of that. Then my first experience of it in learning and development was as a bribe. You know, people don't like your rubbish e-learning. So what we'll do is we'll create leaderboards to try to create some kind of competition. So what it was pretty much saying was that people think it's rubbish, and it is rubbish. But if we create a competition, then maybe they'll come in and they'll do it. It's like, really? And then learning games, which I had Deborah Baird from Philip Morris speak on my podcast very recently, and she's a learning game designer who's come from the real gaming world. We had this fascinating conversation. I said, look, in my time at Disney, games were outsourced to, strictly speaking, Disney bought up gaming organizations who were doing pretty well to grab their talent and then create, try to create games, because Candy Crush was, to use crushing it. Yeah. But Disney couldn't get a successful game off the ground. So we're buying up all these companies. Then it was a case of, no, we'll outsource it. Then we buy up all these companies. And all this time, Disney didn't crack it. But Bob, who's got a learning and development company, he's cracked it. No, he hasn't. He's created a rubbish game that is more of a distraction. And me and Deborah Baird talked about this. If you think you can, with software that's widely available, create a learning game that is going to have mass appeal, you are deluded. And one of the big problems we face in this industry is what I call the IKEA effect, where mm-hmm. you build a rubbish cupboard, but because you've got so much skin in the game, you're really proud of it. Now, I can tell you, Kenneth, in my job...
IKEA's gotten better, though.
No. IKEA's amazing, but the people putting it together, that's what I mean. You put up a rubbish cupboard, and then, you know, so it's a little bit wonky, you know, you still got bits left over from it, but you look at it and think, hey, that's my work. And this is what happens in e-learning. I can't tell you, Kenneth, how many times I've had instructional designers say, you won't believe this. Let me show you. And I'm watching thinking, I mean, mouth on the floor thinking, you think this is good? I mean, it's rubbish. I mean, it's rubbish beyond a belief. And then you get the boast where people go, well, the game was so successful that we had to switch it off because people weren't doing their work because they were playing the game. Yeah, that's called stopping people working. Like that is the opposite of what we're trying to do. I mean, I think that gamification has a place, and Deborah Baird said it, in mm-hmm. enormous organizations when you've got huge reach and you need to engage that audience, then that's probably the time. But when learning and development lean on it and go, do you know what we need here? We need a game. I just think you need to speak with your audience to find out what the problems are that they're really facing, because you're about to create another one. I mean, I think that, yeah, I've got all sorts to say about gamification. And I think that whilst I think it has a place, and I think that there's a place for gamifying work, I really do. But gamifying the thing that helps you with the thing that you're trying to do that distracts you is rubbish.
That brings me exactly to the point, actually. I had a rather interesting guest on my show on the topic of gamification. That was Roman Rakowitz.
Yeah.
And his approach was a little bit all the things that you just said about gamification are pretty much what I experienced, too. Mm. So I can agree on that part. But he gave me a different perspective, and that was the idea that gamification in itself isn't, you know, the sole solution. Rather, gamification in the sense of an intrinsic learning pattern. So we as humans, you know, from child on, we learn by games. So that's how he at least explained it to me. And I thought it was a good explanation of how to bring gamification into the learning arena is by as a intrinsic thing that you do normally. You know, you like to learn and learn through gaming. So that should be the task. Of course, you know, how we accomplish that in detail is where I guess the real key of the whole situation is. But moving from gamification, we're getting closer to the topic that we're actually going to discuss today, which is learning culture versus learning analytics. So the first question is, does the implementation of LMS automatically increase employee performance?
No, I think the majority of the time, the implementation of an LMS has absolutely no effect on performance.
Really?
Yeah, I think that. So here's how LMSs are sold. This silver bullet, when we plug this in and we customize this, it's going to be so alluring and the content is going to be so interactive that your people won't be able to get off this. I know you're laughing out loud. I haven't got to the punchline yet, Kenneth.
Right? Oh, okay.
Right. So that's the promise. L&D are there going, oh my God, this is going to transform it. Have you seen what it can do? It's amazing. It does social learning. It does this. It does that. Then it's plugged in and everyone goes, oh God, not another system. Is that not right? Have you never been to an organization and they've gone, do you know what we need here? We need another system, right? So all of a sudden, so already they're going, oh goodness. Then they'll go, yeah, but it's e-learning in there. Oh, Christ. Right. So then they go, right, well, I'll avoid that like the plague. Then they'll go, oh, but you can't because we'll push mandatory stuff. Oh my. Right. So I've asked this question so many times to real people. People always ask me, what do I do? I'm not nearly as well known in the outside world as I am in learning and development circles. And maybe I'm even overstating the facts there. But so people ask me what I do. And then so I go, you know, your company e-learning. I've never had a response to where people haven't gone, yeah. I've never had a response. Do you know what? No one's ever gone, oh my goodness, you're responsible for creating that amazing stuff. No, they don't, because it's rubbish, right? It's largely rubbish. And when you go, do you know your company's LMS? They go, what? Right, yeah. You know that rubbish system where you have to click 50 times to try to find something, and when you get there, it doesn't actually give you what you want? Yeah, we do that. I mean, look, Kenneth, let's be really, really, like, there is a reason why there are no official LMS stats on the internet, because no one uses it unless it's mandatory, right? This whole industry is overinflated by LMS providers where the market has a louder voice than the practitioners themselves. And a great number of these providers have never worked in learning and development. I mean, it's a perfect car crash right there and then. And then you look at any report worth its salt that says that the senior leadership have very little confidence in learning and development, in its ability to actually affect performance. So when you ask me, does the implementation of LMS automatically increase employee performance? I say it has such a insignificant difference that it's often not even worth the investment.
Wow. Okay. That's a very, I would say, controversial statement.
Well, coming from a practitioner, Kenneth, like I said to you before, I had to, like, me and my team had to work with our work at Disney with senior leadership and employees manually to transform an organization because the learning technology, which was generic stuff within a clunky LMS, was largely resisted or ignored. And there is no generic content out there that will help any organization to transform. You know, back then was hard enough, but right now, I mean, it's overstretching it, isn't it? To think that the technology that's largely resisted has any impact.
Well, I would say two answers to that. First, I would say you're correct in saying there's no silver bullet solution. So that's the first thing. The second thing, I would tend to also agree that in 99% of the cases, there is a certain inherent barrier to introducing another system, be whatever it is, unless it's so fantastic that it it has to be something that's, really mind-boggling for people to, and even then, I think you still have barriers to people accepting and working with the system.
Well, Kenneth, the way I'd say it there is, I think that the only way that a piece of technology, a piece of learning technology can help make any difference is if it's like the supercomputer from Superman 3, when it actually thinks for itself. There isn't a single digital marketer who says, all we need to do is buy HubSpot and it will increase the efficiency and effectiveness of our marketing. They won't, because they realize that it's a tool that will help them with an approach that they've already got. Now, a lot of the time, learning and development think that the implementation of an LMS filled with content, you know, that offers badges and credit for doing an inverted commas learning, is going to make any difference. It really doesn't, because learning and development haven't developed the capability or have an approach sophisticated enough to successfully digitize their learning and development offering. It's usually a launch. So we've got to take a look at digital marketing and realizing there's an entire skill set that is associated, which is all around, you can plug HubSpot in and it can start recognizing some data, but solving, recognizing the problem that needs to be solved, creating personas, digital content development, running experiments, all of that stuff, which is well beyond the realms of a lot of learning and development, will prevent us from digitally transforming our functions. It goes back to the original point. If you implement an LMS, it will make no difference if your learning and development team are not digitally savvy. It really does come down to that, in my belief.
Okay. Then exactly. Okay. Then that brings us then exactly to the two core points of this podcast is then basically, I guess, the first part, I would start with learning culture, because that's in essence what you're addressing, is the fact that there is a certain culture in the learning and development section, or HR, so to say. And in your opinion, is that then transferred? Most companies, I think, try to transfer their ways of doing things in the normal realm into the digital realm. And I think that's where there might be a certain amount of conflict, that's not quite that transferable as one would think. So you have the same setup that you do without all the digitalization in the digital world.
Yeah, look, well, I mean, we see it all the time on LinkedIn, whether it be people saying what they're doing, vendors pushing, or just ads, which say, I saw it quite recently, a PowerPoint converter. what on earth are you converting PowerPoints from? Like into, like seriously, what we've got to remember is when television and movies were first made, you would be taking stage shows and you'd be putting them onto television, which has, mm-hmm. you know, some appeal. But it's not what it is now. I mean, what you do is you recognize the format and you create something that is right for that format. But I mean, I will honestly say I hate webinars. My sister, she's not in learning and development. You know, she'll message me and she'll go, "Oh, when is this awful webinar going to stop?" Like real people don't like this stuff. What we've done is this is the worst crimes of learning and development. We have used technology to increase the scale and the reach of our preferred delivery methods, usually to the detriment of the end user. Like, so what we've done is we've tried to create products around particular topics that don't really reflect the real lives of our people. Well, they can't possibly. These webinars are across all of our functions. So they don't address a particular job or a challenge or a maturity within a particular task. This is just broad and general. And do you know what? After this hour, this is going to fix it. Again, it's about us and it's not, it shouldn't be about us. So going back to your question about learning culture, I like what Andrew Jacobs says about this. He's a pretty prominent voice in the UK, and he headed up learning innovation at Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs, which is kind of our IRS in the UK. And he says, your organization has a learning culture. Right. Mm-hmm. Before you even try and start anything, your organization already has a learning culture. But what learning and development often think about a learning culture is to what extent people engage in the learning products that are provided. So you've got your rubbish LMS that no one goes to. You've got your classes where you might have 12 people at a time attend a program across your 100,000 people. You've got your LMS with all of your generic content. Really? Are we really talking about inspiring or developing a learning culture like that? Well, so a learning culture already happens and it already exists. So my thoughts are, to what extent can you help people to do what it is that they're trying to do better, and not just in service of their everyday, their role or the changes that might be happening in the environment, but also around what the organization requires in terms of the development of their skill sets and their progress through the organization. All of that, you've got a structural element that has an impact on what the learning culture is, and then the solutions that are off that help to address those challenges and the situations that people and the organization face themselves in. Those can impact the learning culture, but what we've got to recognize is that filling platforms full of generic content do not enhance a learning culture. Largely, they can distract from it. We've got to come down to, rather than the provision, I love what Elliot Macy says, many in learning and development have confused our role with publishing, with making stuff available, and it really isn't. An administrator can do that, but we're a profession. We should expect more. We should expect more from both ourselves and our ability to deliver meaningful results.
Okay, so that would then, in essence, then we're back to the tricky question. So learning culture. So it's basically that companies themselves, installing an LMS just for the sake of installing an LMS really doesn't bring anything. So that won't automatically translate into a more effective workforce. Mm.
That's right.
Couple areas I might disagree on that, but in the large part. So it's then the root of it is then to change the learning culture, to change the awareness, to make when you're looking at your LMS or think of implementing the LMS as a company, you have to look at your own learning culture and try to transfer that to a certain extent into the LMS, and at the same time. I think the biggest gap might be being able to transfer the actual learning into actual doing. So I think you stated that in a discussion that we had prior to our podcast here, that learning for the sake of learning is okay, but learning doesn't equal performance right away. So for me, the idea is that I think then in our content that we provide within the LMS, that oftentimes there is maybe where I would see the lack, that does the content fit the work that needs to be done actually?
Yeah, that's a big thing. One of the biggest flaws in learning and development right now is if we buy a platform that has so much content, then there must be something for everyone. So what that is where marketing's been. So marketing left this behind. It's called spray and pray. So what you do is you create as much marketing stuff as you like because some of it will land. Now, again, like, so you're can you see like how immature this is? So what we'll do is we'll buy this platform, and it's beautiful, by the way, and we'll fill it full of content, and we'll get all of these integrations, and we'll create all of this stuff. What's the problem you're trying to solve, eh? What's the problem you're trying to solve with that? We didn't have this before. No. You've just invented that. That's not a problem. What's the problem in the organization you are trying to solve with this piece of learning tech? You know, when you come down to it, like, the only problem that filling a platform full of content solves is that you didn't have it before, and that's not a problem. That's an invented problem, right? So when you come back to it, you say, so what's the real problem within your organization? Well, at the moment, we've had to close down a lot of our stores. We've got social distancing. We've still got stakeholder backing. That means shareholder backing. That means they still need us to deliver X returns. Okay, how are we going to do that? Well, we've got to do things fundamentally differently. Okay, we need to define what fundamentally differently means. Oh no, we've got a course on creativity. Get out of my office. Like that. See what I mean? It's too big a stretch. Like, so what it is, it's not solving problems. It's solving imaginary problems, like with generic one size fits all solutions. If we can't define what the problems are within our organizations, then it doesn't matter, because Google's got the content situation all wrapped up. But what Google doesn't have its arms around is how do you help your people to be successful now in incredibly challenging times, and help them to progress in the right way, to do enough of the right stuff that respects and understands our culture, our clients, our stakeholders, and all of these other people, in order to do more of the right stuff and get the right results. Do you know what I mean? And there isn't a silver bullet.
So yeah, but is it okay? Then let's boil it. Let's break it down a little bit. Would you say it's fundamentally more the responsibility of the client to understand his needs better, or is it us as LMS providers to better understand the client's needs, do a better analysis, and do maybe, you know, to maybe come up with the unspoken things? Because, you know, like you said, I think, you know, oftentimes an LMS is installed and there's a fundamental idea of what you want to do with it. But maybe, as you said, it doesn't specifically address the problem. But is that something that the customers are looking for the LMS providers to give them? Or is it something that they need to look at themselves, in the sense of make an informed decision before you go and buy something?
Yeah, look, I think it's down to the clients. I mean, LMS providers will only sell what people want to buy. But what they've got to realize is that the whole rip and replace, buy another platform that looks better and with more engaging content, it is doing the same thing. There's a Simpsons sketch where Lisa Simpson sets up two experiments. One, there's a rat or a mouse in a thing, and it's all they've attached some food or some cheese to electrodes. The rat on the mouse goes and touches it once, it gets electrocuted and then cowers in the corner. And then there's Bart Simpson, and she's electrified a cupcake, and he grabs the cupcake and goes zzz, ow, grabs it again, zzz, ow, grabs it again, zzz, ow. This is L&D. The last LMS full of content didn't work. I know, we'll get another one. Like, you know, it's exactly the same. We never look at ourselves and go, do you know what? This isn't actually solving any problems. What this is doing is, this is just another product that we launch, get an immediate hit and some credit, and then helps only with us doing the administration of compliance training once a year. Other than that, it's just a load of content no one wants to use, because suites, LMS is full of generic content, and it doesn't matter how you dress it up, doesn't solve any problems. And so I think that there is this. So this is where L&D needs to take a look at digital marketing and say that you've stopped just spraying money in order to make people aware of a product, to understanding who it is you're seeking to influence, and then helping them to make smarter buying decisions, and then getting them to follow your funnel based on what you understand about those people, what it is that that buying cycle looks like. And of course, different buying cycles look differently depending on what they are, whether, you know, that's a mother to be, you know, if there's a mother to be and you've got an idea about when she's likely to have the baby, that's going to be a very different funnel to somebody who's interested in buying a car. But either way, you're going to create a funnel that helps to educate that person, helps you to build some brand awareness and some brand trust, and help them in the end to buy that thing that that you want them to. So you can do it really smart, but it does come down to what is it that people are trying to do and how can you help them to do that better. You've got people coming into your organization, there's one load of people. You've got people being promoted to management. You've got people who are largely neglected when they enter senior leadership. You know, all of this stuff where we'd be over reliant on educational formats, whether that be a flagship program or generic e-learning, that don't seek to understand the challenges that those people really face, but seek to create an education experience based on best practices and theories that we pull from either the social sciences, psychology, or from learning and development. What we've got to realize, those people are trying to do a thing, and where they're going to learn is by trying that thing. And this is where I think that we can really help. Digital marketers, we can seek to influence behavior. We have got to drop this delusion that we have that we change behavior, because we don't. The only people that change behavior are the owners of that behavior. We are like digital marketers. We have the opportunity to influence them, but we have to be able to influence them whilst they're ready to be influenced. Otherwise, again, you know, we miss huge opportunities. And again, you can see how our digitization, smart digital tools can help to do this, but I still don't see a place for filling a platform up with generic content and dressing it up as the next silver bullet. This takes skills. This takes a thirst to truly understand the problems within any given organization.
Okay, so we've then clearly placed that part. So the importance of learning culture. Mm-hmm. And having that learning culture exist within the company. And to the third part was then basically getting the L&D department to basically recognize more of the needs of their customers.
Yeah.
Okay. So with the next step in the LMS, you also have, learning analytics. Mm. So in this sense, my understanding of learning analytics is basically to find a measurable way to see if the courses and the materials that you're offering through the LMS are actually generating some type of results that are positive results. Mm. So combining those two, what is your understanding of basic learning analytics?
So learning analytics, I think, belongs in the learning pile. That I don't think I don't think there's any organization whose end should ever be learning. It used to be that in the day when all we had was a classroom, some flip charts and flip chart pens. That was all we could do. But again, I think we should be focusing on the real problems in any given organization. If we understand what the problems are, then we can, well, first of all, we need to check that there's data to back up that's a real problem. Too many learning and development initiatives are started due to limited observation. So someone in HR might say, do you know what? I don't think our leaders are emotionally intelligent enough.
That's a good one. See, now I was gonna pull out a little simpler example.
Yeah, go on. What was yours? Yeah, go on.
Well, the classic one that's always the easy one is, you know, sales. You send somebody through all kinds of sales training, and in the end, you try to then verify that the training was effective by seeing an increase in his sales. Mm. So that's the classic. But there might be other factors than that you simply aren't really aware of.
Yeah, the other variables. Yeah,
To the fact that, you know, yeah,
there could have been a promotion
So I mean, you know, maybe he. You learn how to, you know, you learn the right words to say. So yes, this is our top of the line vehicle. You can buy it at 10% discount, blah, 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 blah. But maybe that training is a knowledge that the person has, but maybe what's missing is the interaction part.
Yeah.
So, I guess the idea is to get analytics to the point that you can have a feedback into the system. Into the LMS to give you an idea of why something is not succeeding, maybe.
Yeah, but again, if we're looking at learning, if what we're doing is trying to justify the investment in the platform and the content, then I think that, you know, we'd be asking people how useful they found that, whether they liked it, whether they'd recommend it. NPS. So you've already made a decision. You've got your solution in inverted commas. Now you just need to justify the investment in it. But if what you're doing is solving the real problems of your organization, and this is where I think smarter learning tech is going, then you can create dashboards that that let you build custom axes that show what the real problems are you're trying to solve. So with induction, for example, you might be trying to address speed to competency, people staying, people passing their probation for the first time, people passing their probation and then performing, people delivering results within a particular time scale. I mean, for one of my clients quite recently was looking to reduce the time that recruitment consultants were billing from 12 months to 3 months, and they did that. So, but they started with the data, but they went with what is the average amount of time that it takes for new consultants to start billing. So there's a real problem to solve. So then what you do is the learning analytics, the stuff that we're used to measuring, and that's around engagement and satisfactions, any ratings, are simply indicators. They're no end game. I mean, we talked for a long time that, I mean, the fact that somebody's satisfied, they like it, and they told you they'd recommend it, it's not even an indicator of learning, let alone performance. But if what you're doing is you're recognizing that there is a real problem, your data backs it up that there's a problem, you can then validate that with the people you're seeking to influence, and then you can build something that is directly aimed at helping them to do what they're trying to do better. And look, that will scare the living bejesus out of a lot of learning and development people whose primary or instinct tells them to just buy another system, fill it full of content and launch it to get the credit. But it is so much easier to solve real problems from the bottom up than it is to continually try to drive traffic towards a platform that people are resisting.
Okay. But you did mention engagement. So if you get a feedback that basically the engagement is good, that somebody recommends it, you at least have, for me, that's the first step in at least having a chance to bring change about.
Oh, I think that's a leap, isn't it, Kenneth?
No,
I mean, it's a massive leap. Like, no. The fact that somebody liked it and then you think it's going to bring about change, I think that's a leap.
No. I think not that they liked it is going to bring about change, but I think it's the first, because one of the first things we said, you know, is that basically it's hard for people to accept a new technology. So if we at least get to the point where they accept the new technology and find it interesting, then we can take the next step. And that would be basically to get to, as an American English, I'd like to say, get down to the nitty gritty and to actually solve the problems. But the first thing is to get somebody engaged and to say, okay, hey, the training was interesting. Now in the next step, maybe that's because this is my philosophy. My philosophy is first, I need to get you entertained to listen. If you find it interesting and fun, then the next aspect is for me to start filling that time period with information that's actually useful. And then the third step is to not only fill it with information that's useful, but basically something that you can then turn into something productive.
Right.
That would be my approach.
I get what you mean. And I think that I think I get where you come from when you're trying to get people to do something that they don't want to do. But I think that there's so much more opportunities. What if we could be there at the moment of need to influence the moment of apply? And I, you know, when I'm doing speaking engagements, so to get the conversation away from learning, I say, who here has been promoted to people manager in their career, right? And then I say, what was it like? You know, just people then go, well, it was horrible. I mean, I was really excited about the role, but you know, it's really scary. Like you're doing this job, you don't really know what it is. You've got all of these extra responsibilities. You're still trying to do your old job. You're still trying to do this. You go, so what did you feel? Well, I felt anxious. I didn't sleep for the first 3 months. So you got all this, and then I go, would you like an animated fun game to help you with that? Look at me as if to go, what are you talking about? Or would you like something that helped you overcome all of those challenging things as you were facing them? And they were like, oh my God, that'd be amazing. And I always say, there's no trick to this. Like if you can give people what they need when they need it, and people are going through some really challenging times when they are when they're expected to transition into and through a particular role, that if we are not capitalizing on that, then we need to generate concern and motivation at other times. It's so much easier to help them when they need the help in the context of what it is they're trying to do. And this is what digital marketing does.
One second. Let me throw in some information. Let me see how if this hits the spot. Mm. We had for a well-known consulting company. We did a couple of content trainings, and one of the things was also to make it mobile, so that when one of their consultants basically goes out to a customer meeting, that they can go on to their cell phone and they can do a little a checklist to allow them then to smoothly go in transition then from the time that they're, you know, heading to the client to then basically go into the meeting, and you know, you're spot on. So it's like a little prep coaching for that. And that I think would perfectly describe the situation that, you know, of getting the support you need at your fingertips to support you in that specific situation.
Yeah, look, I you know, as a bit of immediate performance support, that really helps. But in the work that I do and working with new managers and asking, what is it that you were trying to do when you first got started? And what were the questions, situations and challenges that you faced? And we have new managers saying, I didn't know what the job was. Right? I go, oh, brilliant. So you go to the generic e-learning over there. You do 45 minutes and it will tell you all about mission. It will talk about vision. It will talk about one-to-ones and the GROW model. No. I still don't know what the job is. And what questions might I be asked? Right. What might surprise me? Right. So all of this stuff, which is real, right? So this is the stuff that we neglect. And then we invest our time in creating an instructionally robust, generic e-learning solution. And it's a mismatch. So what you've done is you've missed the biggest opportunity to influence the way that people think about the role. And then they assimilate within the role. And then later, we try to reprogram them to do the best practice stuff, remiss of the context that they are actually performing in. I just think there's a big, big opportunity missed, and it's well beyond a checklist.
Okay. Well, yeah, but like I said, I have a feeling maybe you've been in the industry longer than I have, so for me, it's a little bit more new, so to say. So maybe I'm still in the allure of the shiny new object type situation.
You wouldn't be the only one in learning and development, Kenneth.
Either that or I'm doing the Bart Simpson thing with a cupcake, one or the other. I'm not quite sure yet. So maybe all my illusions or delusions haven't quite been expelled yet. But in essence then, you would say that we call this in our pre-talk to this podcast. I thought you once again you hit out a really good statement: the flawed equation. Mm. So I think, and that kind of brings it to a point. The topics that we've been discussing is, I guess, in essence, the flawed equation, that just providing somebody with the ability to learn, or just content or whatever without really analyzing the needs behind that is somewhat a how should I say
a lost errand. Proposition. Yeah, it's a false errand. Yeah, I completely agree. We operate on the flawed premise that learning equals performance, and I think that we do that because we invest so much in our ability to inspire people to learn. And we think that if we can tell them to be curious and we can provide them with lots of content and lots of experiences, then like the LMS full of content, we then go, well, there must be something there. But without analysis, like we're only relying on hope. And like this world, we've got to realize that we are in a profession. Like this is, you know, we would like, we hear it all the time, we'd like a seat at the table. We'd like to be taken seriously. We'd like to be brought in to conversations earlier. Well, the only way to do that is to actually affect performance, and not as an unintended consequence, but intentionally. And so whilst I believe that learning equals performance is a flawed equation, I believe that that usefulness plus timeliness, like of any solution. So, and usefulness, and that has to be determined by the end user themselves or the employee themselves, and timely in terms of this is when they're facing the actual challenge or unfamiliar situation. Then I think engagement's the least of our worries. We won't be bribing people to use anything or overly convincing. But if we get into them when they need it and providing the useful stuff, useful on their terms, and they engage, that's when we've got the opportunity to influence performance, because we are there at the moment of need, to quote Bob Mosier, to influence the moment of apply. Now, in this regard, Google and YouTube are more successful than a lot of learning and development functions, because they can provide broadly what people need. Again, I'll go back to without any of the context of the organization, which a lot of the time is the reasons that people are successful or not in any given organization. I think it was Boris Groysberg who stated that, you know, context is so integral to people's success.
Always.
Yeah, and Malcolm Gladwell stated the same in his recent book, Talking with Strangers, that you can't, it's not enough just to understand the person, you have to understand their world. And again, if you don't understand the problems that you're seeking to solve, then any solution will do. But when any solution will do, it's not going to have an impact.
Okay. Well, since you did bring up the topic of books, then for our listeners, do you have this is off the cuff. Do you have a recommendation? I include myself in this listening part. Do you have a recommendation of books that one should read if one wants to delve into this topic a little deeper?
Yeah. So I'd recommend Nick Shackleton-Jones's How People Learn. I think it's a critical book for learning and development, and busts a lot of the mythology around what we do. And I think it brings our practice right up to date. I think that too often learning and development look to justify the solutions that we deliver, but without fully understanding the reasons why we've delivered those solutions in the first place or made them available. And I think How People Learn is a reminder of what it is that we're in organizations to do, and will help us to do more of the right stuff.
Okay. Looks like I'm going to have to get on Amazon and order that one right away so that I can pull in some more information. So to bring us then to the final like question of this whole matter. So fundamentally, I would say, so we need to improve the learning culture. We can then with the improvement of learning culture, we can then implement learning analytics to further, improve the situation. But where do you see the greatest potential development for, well, I would say LMSs or maybe learning and development as an industry as a whole?
So I think
those are two big questions, very open-ended questions. Okay. Let's tackle, since the topic is LMS, let's tackle the LMS thing first, and then maybe we can do a learning development as an industry as a whole.
Sure. So the first thing I think we need to recognize is the LMS is a tool. It's not the solution or the end in itself. As I go back to, A novice implementing HubSpot is still going to have the same problems in digital marketing as they had before they implemented HubSpot. But somebody who's a bit more skilled and has a greater understanding of what it is that they are trying to affect will start using that tool. And it is incredibly powerful, more powerful than any LMS is comparably in learning and development. So I think that the greatest developments in LMS, I think, will be in it, the integration with the work itself. I work with a client who runs their learning, their organization through a data tool, like it's a data hub, and their CRM, their other business tools, BI information, HR systems, and their LMS are hooked into this data hub, and they run their business from it. And they are a challenger bank. They are at the forefront of digital, and they are incredibly successful. So they run their business off of data. So I think that the advances in the LMS will be integrating it within the tools that that people already use for work, and almost becoming invisible. If you can integrate with Teams or Slack or Salesforce or wherever people are actually working, and you could integrate with business information and people analytics, you really truly can understand what it is that people are trying to do, and then help and guide them to do more of the right stuff to get the right results, truly integrating work and learning. And I think that that will elevate the role of learning and development from a peripheral every now and again, sometimes even a nice to have, to something that is absolutely critical to the way that the organization performs and grows.
Wow. Okay. Now that's a very colorful picture. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to actually rewind this later and listen to that again. Because that contained a lot of information. So I can just advise to our listeners to take that one in again. Okay, so I think we've fundamentally answered, you know, most of the questions I had. So now we're going to go a little bit towards the end of the podcast, go a little bit off the reservation, and that's where the this podcast also receives its wonderful name, E-Learning Brunch, and that is the question that all our learners or listeners would like to know is, can you cook? Do you cook?
Kenneth, I can cook. I enjoy cooking as well.
Now I didn't check your personal. Are you still single?
I am. Yes.
Oh, anybody listening? There you go. Here you got somebody. David James can cook and he enjoys cooking. So you heard it first here. So,
but maybe I'm single because I'm such a bad cook. But I enjoy it anyway, Kenneth.
Okay. And if you had like a go-to recipe, what would that be?
So I will say, so I do have a daughter, 6-year-old daughter, and we love cooking together, and we cook carrot and apple muffins. So these carrot and apple muffins contain, as well as the carrots and the apples, ground almonds, raisins, mixed spice, cinnamon, an egg, right? So there's your muffin part. You cook that. There's no badness in there. That's all good. So there's no flour. There's no added sugar. It tastes like an actual muffin. And then you'll top that with a type of cream that's got ricotta, that's got vanilla extract and cream cheese and a little drizzle of honey. And that tastes like it's got full of sugar. My daughter loves them, and they are really good for you.
Okay, David, you're going to have to send me that recipe later, and I'll post it, because that sounds like something that I really, really, really want to try. So I can add to my small repertoire of things that I cook or fix, and I will add that to it, definitely. So, okay, well, that actually brings us to the end of our podcast. So hopefully it was engaging for everybody. There's that magical word that I like to use, engaging. And hopefully you had some useful information. I think it was a very critical podcast. I haven't had one that's been this critical. Just from the premise of the idea of the fault of the faulty equation. So thank you very, very much, James. David, for bringing
happens all the time, Kenneth. Happens all the time. I say it's my fault for having two Christian names.
We had, you know, that actually, we had I had a colleague at work, and his name was Paul Frank. And that was really, really tough for people. And David James, it's still tricky, but Paul Frank was really to the point that nobody knew what the first name and the last name was.
I feel it.
Okay. So, David, if people have any questions to you, they can, of course, look you up on the internet, right?
Yeah.
Or look you up under LinkedIn.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, you'll find me on LinkedIn. I'm always posting about learning and development. They'll find me at the Learning and Development Podcast, available on iTunes, Spotify, and all others, and also on Twitter at David in Learning.
Cool. So, and that brings us to the end of my podcast here, E-Learning Brunch. If you like it, as usual, smash the like button. If you have any questions, just look at the typical hashtag E-Learning Brunch. So, last thing, we also have a raffle going on, a Christmas raffle. So if you want to participate in that, just take a look on our website. And thank you very much. And David, I really, really appreciate the time that you spent with me on this podcast. And maybe we'll have to do another one just to follow up once I've read the real nice book here that you recommended, How People Learn. And once I have that information in my background, I'll ask you some more critical questions.
I'll get Nick on. Nick's a wonderful guest too. I've had him on my podcast, but it's been a pleasure, Nick. Thank you.
Okay, good. Then, should I read his book before I ask him?
I think you should.
Wise thing to do. Okay. So thank you very much, David. That's all. So have a good one, and thanks and goodbye.